Morning, everyone. Welcome. Before we begin today, I want to take a minute to once again condemn the violent and criminal actions of a handful of self-described anarchists who continue to try to burn down buildings and harm our city employees and others. Last night, the police were successful in identifying and arresting a person who is suspected of arson. This person has been arrested at similar so-called direct action events in the past. Arson is a serious felony, and it can lead to sentences of many years in prison. It's a serious felony because it can and it does kill people. I want to make it perfectly clear. I support peaceful protests. I understand why so many people are upset and peacefully taking to the streets. Once again, in Minnesota, a Black man has died at the hands of police. These deaths are traumatizing. They're upsetting. They're wrong. People are right to protest for change. But I also want to draw a clear distinction between the peaceful actions of those who gathered at Waterfront Park with those who attempted to burn down a publicly owned building, threw bricks, concrete, and bottles at the police, and fired mortars at them as well. Peaceful protest is necessary. It helps us evolve as a society, and it's welcomed in Portland, and it's protected by the Constitution. But burning things, breaking things, and attempting to injure police puts lives at risk. I condemn those who are involved in these criminal acts. I want to express my appreciation for the arrests the police continue to make. And for those who engage in criminal destruction and violence, please know that our investigations continue. And we're doing everything we can, if you've been involved in this kind of criminal destruction, to identify you, to find you, to arrest you, and to hold you accountable. Finally, I want to remind you in particular of what Avel Gordley, a former state senator, said recently about so-called self-described anarchists. Quote, "You are not helping. You are hurting Black people. You need peacemakers and peacekeepers." And what former state senator Margaret Carter said, quote, "I stand with people who take to the streets to seek change, but I don't stand with you in seeking our city being torn apart. I ask you to cease and desist immediately from your violent acts of destruction in our city." I think Senators Gordley and Carter said it well, and I agree with them. I support nonviolent demonstrations. I support the calls for racial justice and equity and common sense police reform. But the minute that one crosses a line and engages in criminal destruction, acts of arson, acts of violence, that is no longer peaceful protest. That is criminal activity, and it is unacceptable. Thank you, colleagues. Keelan, this is the Wednesday, or we do have Keelan back today. Good, it's good to have you back, Keelan. This is the Wednesday, April 14th, 2021 morning session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty. Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through these challenges to conduct the city's business. And we'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Thank you.
Good morning. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for a public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record, but your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist, and if you're representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that council meetings are recorded.
Thank you. First up is communications.
The two communications this morning have requested to present together.
That's fine.
Okay, I'll read both of them. 232, request of Amy Henriksen to address council regarding Northwest Natural Gas. And 233, request of Lila McLowry to address council regarding Northwest Natural Gas.
Very good. Good morning. The two of you have 6 minutes.
Thank you for having me here today. My name is Lila McLowry, and I'm a senior at Franklin High School. I'm here today as a member of the Portland Youth Climate Council. Portland has set many admirable climate goals over the last several years. However, actions speak louder than words, and we need to make sure that our actions are as strong as our goals. As I mentioned at last week's council meeting, we are concerned with Northwest Natural's role in Portland's future. 60% of Portland homes use methane, and Northwest Natural would like to increase that number. The labeling of methane as natural gas was a brilliant marketing scheme used to convince the world it was a bridge fuel to transition away from fossil fuels like coal. However, methane gas is 84 times more potent than carbon dioxide over 20 years, and its continued use won't lead us towards decarbonization. Northwest Natural will likely try to refute this, saying that renewable natural gas, or biomethane, and renewable hydrogen are a perfect solution to decarbonize their product. Despite what the gas industry would like you to believe, supplies of what they call renewable natural gas are limited and only have the potential to meet a small fraction of gas demand. When methane production is unavoidable, its use should be reserved for those industries that cannot be easily electrified. Residential uses do not fall under that category. RNG is also very expensive. RNG is typically 8 to 17 times more expensive than fossil gas, and these costs will be passed on to consumers with an expectation that consumer bills could rise fivefold. It's hard to see how a fivefold increase in heating costs is going to, in the words of the Climate Emergency Declaration, prioritize the protection of low-income customers. There are similar issues with the current industry enthusiasm for hydrogen, which I do not have time to go into today. In contrast to RNG's high costs, over time, electrification is actually cheaper than methane. According to Washington's Deep Decarbonization Pathway Study, the lowest cost method to achieve 80% carbon reductions by 2050 relies on electrifying buildings and reducing residential gas use by 85%. Furthermore, a UCLA study found that electrifying California's buildings would create 8 times more jobs than would be lost in the gas industry. New electric construction is more cost-effective long-term, and it will help us pave the way for a sustainable future. Our electric grid may not be fully clean now, but it has the potential to be. Methane will never be clean. The city needs to use the scientifically accurate language when talking about this product. We ask that you immediately make this a city policy that when speaking of Northwest Natural's product, you accurately describe it as methane rather than the greenwash term natural gas. And we ask that you actively explore ways to limit the expansion of methane infrastructure in Portland and to incentivize building electrification. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here today. My name is Amy Henriksen. I'm a sophomore at Lincoln High School, and I'm also here on behalf of the Portland Youth Climate Council. Not only is natural gas harmful to the environment, but it also harms residents of Portland. Oxford University explained that children in homes with natural gas stove have a 42% increased risk of asthma symptoms over those without. I am a 15-year-old living in a home using natural gas, and I have asthma. With no control over the choice of these appliances, I have to wonder if this is what causes my problems. Every time I try to go outside and enjoy nature and end up doubled over, struggling to breathe, I think about the role of these toxins in my own home. UCLA stated that 1 hour of cooking on a gas stove produces nitrogen dioxide levels that would be illegal if found outside. Most users don't even know about these health impacts, and it's wrong to allow people to unknowingly harm themselves. I didn't know that about my own home either. Minimizing the risk of physical harm and death to Portlanders is a main concern for me, as I hope it is for you. In addition, worsened air quality and pollution disproportionately affects low-income communities. Low-income individuals are often renters with no control over appliance installation and maintenance, and typically living in smaller units, which can result in elevated pollution concentrations. These communities already bear the burdens of environmental risks. Methane is clearly a significant environmental justice concern. Methane is also a public safety risk. The 2013 earthquake risk study for the CEI hub stated that Northwest Natural receives the majority of their natural gas from pipelines that cross under the Columbia River near Sauvie Island and between Meshuggah and Troutdale. Soils at both of these river crossings are subject to liquefaction. It doesn't matter how many times the pipes are replaced or upgraded, they will not withstand the Cascadia earthquake. In addition, all electric buildings are more resilient following earthquakes than ones using gas. In fact, Clean Coalition estimates that electric service can be restored 30 times faster after an earthquake than gas. Unfortunately, we cannot provide you with the entire body of climate research on natural gas today. We are youth with limited time slots. It's possible that Northwest Natural will come to you after this testimony and declare their commitment to the environment, name-dropping techniques like decarbonization, green hydrogen, and renewable natural gas. We've met with them and are familiar with this tactic. As public representatives, it will be your job to approach them and to approach that information with caution. After so many years of greenwashing, it would be unfortunate for our city to simply take Northwest Natural at their word instead of doing the critical analysis that is so long overdue. I ask that you explore new ideas to limit methane infrastructure, including incentivizing electrification and limiting natural gas in future construction. I hope that when you consider the problem, you think of the people, especially the youth. Thank you.
Thank you both. Appreciate it very much. Commissioner Mapps.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to thank Lila and Amy for their testimony. My office is thinking about these issues too, and should they be interested, I'd like to invite Lila and Amy to contact my office, and we'll set up a meeting with my staffer who's working on climate change issues, Matt Lazuski. So if you are interested in pursuing that conversation, you can just send an email to office@maps@portlandoregon.gov, and we'll set up a conversation, and I look forward to that conversation. And thank you for your testimony.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Lila and Amy. That's a great offer. I'd strongly encourage you to take it up. Thanks both of you for your great testimony. Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. Does that complete communications today, Keelan? Is it just the two?
Yes, that's correct, Mayor.
All right, good. Well, we went with quality, not quantity. That's always the way to go. Consent agenda is next up. Any items been pulled from the consent agenda?
We've had no requests.
Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Aye.
Mapps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. Please read, we're on the regular agenda now. We have no time certain. Please read items 238 and 239.
Item 238, proclaim April 11 through April 17, 2021, to be Safety Telecommunicators Appreciation Week, and item 239, recognize Bureau of Emergency Communications telecommunicators as first responders in the city of Portland.
Commissioner Mapps.
You're muted, Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Commissioner Ryan. And I wanted to start out by saying it's an honor for me to be here today. And one of my other honors since I've been on this council is to serve as the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Emergency Communications. Our emergency communications operators play a critical role in delivering public safety services to those of us who live, work, and play in Multnomah County. Portland's emergency communications dispatchers and call takers are crucial, but at times overlooked members of Portland's public safety system. Our teams over at BOIC work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and every day they save lives here in Portland. I want Portland's emergency communications dispatchers and call takers to know that this council and this city sees the work that they do. We know how challenging this work is, and we know how good BOIC is at getting that work done. And we are grateful for the labors of our emergency communications dispatchers and call takers. And Mr. Mayor, colleagues, neighbors, there's something else I want to share with you today about our BOIC family. Today, many members of Portland's emergency communications community are in mourning due to the death of our friend and colleague, BOIC User Board Chair Frank Ray. Frank passed on March 27th, 2021. Frank was an enthusiastic advocate for Multnomah County, especially East County and the city of Gresham. Frank took his leadership responsibilities seriously, and he applied his keen mind to helping BOIC be better. And in doing so, he made Multnomah County and Portland safer. So I'd like to take a minute, if you will indulge me, to just have a moment of silence to remember our friend and colleague, Frank Ray. Thank you. Frank, we miss you. And here to tell us more about the important work being done by Portland's emergency communications call takers and dispatchers is BOIC Director Bob Causey. Director, welcome.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, and colleagues. I am Bob Causey, Director of the Bureau of Emergency Communications. We're also known as BOEC or BOEC, so I'll use those terms as I speak today. It's my distinct pleasure to be here today to express my appreciation for the work the 911 telecommunicators at BOEC do. When someone calls 911 in an emergency, it is quite possibly the worst day of their lives. The 911 professionals at BOEC are described as the first responders in our community, as they are the vital link between a cry for help and those who provide that help. We answer over 500,000 911 calls each year, and are in the unique position to render aid before help arrives. Whether it be CPR, childbirth, first aid, or simply a caring voice in the midst of turmoil, BOEC telecommunicators serve their community with distinction. They are first responders. It's an honor to speak on their behalf today. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Causey. And Commissioner Mapps, is this the appropriate moment for me to read the proclamation? All right, I'm getting a thumbs up. So colleagues, it's my honor to be able to read this proclamation on behalf of our good folks in our first response system. Whereas emergencies require police, fire, or medical services, which occur at any time, and whereas prompt police, fire, or medical response is critical to the protection of life and the preservation of property. And whereas public safety telecommunicators of the Bureau of Emergency Communications, BOIC, are the first contact for our community's call for help for emergency services. And whereas BOIC Public Safety Telecommunicators are professionals with expertise in medical, fire, police, and now Portland Street Response Dispatch protocols. And whereas BOIC Public Safety Telecommunicators monitor police and fire activity by radio, thus ensuring first responder safety and providing a vital link of information. And whereas we are grateful for the important and often life-saving work accomplished by BOIC Public Safety Telecommunicators. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim the week of April 11th through April 17th, 2021, as Public Safety Telecommunicators Appreciation Week in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day. Thank you all for the great work that you do. And colleagues, that is the proclamation. There is a resolution related to this. Keelan, is there any public testimony on the resolution?
No one signed up.
Any further discussion on the resolution, colleagues, before I call the roll? Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Thank you, Commissioner Mattis, for bringing this proclamation and resolution forward. And I also really appreciate the memorial moment that we had for Frank Gray. Thank you for that, Commissioner Mapps. Director Causey, it's always good to see you. And I agree, our first responders have been on the front lines of not only this pandemic that we're currently experiencing, but on multiple crises our city has faced within the last year. Thank you, City of Portland responders, for your service. You are the first responders of the first responders and your dedication to the safety of our communities. I'm also happy to support policy that recognizes telecommunicators as first responders. This group is often the first line of engagement, as we just heard, for our community members at times of emergency. These employees are quick to assess a phone call, calm, negotiate, advise, and provide instruction to community members to obtain accurate and essential information necessary to establish priority and initiate a timely response. These telecommunicators are tasked with major responsibilities and should be recognized as such. I proudly vote aye.
Maps.
I would want to take this moment to thank my colleague, Commissioner Ryan, for his thoughtful remarks. I also want to recognize the wise and kind leadership of Director Causey. And I want to thank everyone in our BOIC family for the work that they do to keep Portlanders safe. It is for those reasons that I am proud to vote aye.
Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Mapps, for bringing this proclamation forward. And I also appreciate the special acknowledgement for Mr. Gray. Leaders like that in our community are very important and make a huge difference in lives. Our city's emergency telecommunicators are heroes who play a very instrumental and crucial role in crisis response. And their work is both very precise and requiring sound judgment in making those split second decisions that can be a matter of life or death for the community. And their work is especially important to the impact of the new Portland Street Response Program, as well as our telecommunicators help determine when a mental health professional is in need in that situation. So that is another special skill set that they have. I wanna give my sincere appreciation to all the staff that show up every single day in support of our community in this critical way. Thank you for your service. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I am glad that we're taking these steps. And as many people are aware, communications first responders are not at this point elevated to the same classification as other first responders. That is an active discussion both here locally, and it's my understanding it is also a discussion nationally. And so I think this is a timely resolution, and the proclamation I think was appropriate to acknowledge the incredibly challenging work that our telecommunicators do at BOIC. It's really been a heck of a year for them. They've worked long hours. They've done a terrific job of triaging limited resources. And there's no question the work that they're engaged in prevents injuries and it saves lives. And I'm deeply grateful for the work they do. And just on a sort of personal note, if you haven't had a chance yet to go into BOIC and do a test drive with the good folks there, sit down with them for a few minutes and see what it is they actually do. It'll give you a whole new appreciation for the work they do. I'm happy to vote aye. The resolution is adopted. And thank you all for your work. Director Kazi, please give our good regards to the people back at BOIC.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up, item 240.
Appoint Adrienne Feldstein and Leah Plack to the Urban Forestry Commission for a term to expire April 30, 2025.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. The Urban Forestry Commission advises Portland Parks and Recreation's Urban Forestry Division, the Portland Parks and Recreation Director, and City Council on issues impacting Portland trees. Commissioners represent diverse geographic areas, interests, and expertise of the Portland community. These appointments are made as a result of a selection process that sought to value and reflect the diversity of the Portland community. The first recommended appointee is Adrienne Feldstein. In her interest statement, Adrienne said, "I would be honored and happy to serve on the Urban Forestry Commission. As a public and environmental health physician, I have dedicated my life and career to improving environmental health and safety and improving the quality of life for Oregonians. I have taught swimming for Portland and Parks and Recreation, and I'm a passionate user and advocate for our parks and tree canopy. I believe that our urban forests and our parks are critical to our future that must address climate change. I stand ready and willing to do whatever I can to preserve and enhance our tree cover and resolve the inequities we have now." The second recommended appointee is Leah Plack. Leah is a career educator specializing in science education and teacher professional development. She currently teaches physical education in Portland Public Schools. In her interest statement, Leah says, "Portlanders do not have equitable access to tree cover, meaning some communities will experience hotter and hotter summers as the climate warms, while communities with more trees will be more resilient to climate change. This understanding of the intrinsic value of urban trees led me to become more interested in how our city manages trees, who has access to trees in Portland, and how we balance the need for denser, more affordable housing with green spaces that are necessary to our local ecosystems and our own health and wellness. I hope that my background in science education and working with diverse communities can be useful to the Urban Forestry Commission and to our city as we plan for the resilient future Portland, the resilient future Portland that we all hope to live in." So more information about Adrienne and Leah is included in your council packet, and park staff are here if you have any questions. So back to you.
All right, good. These sound like two really outstanding individuals, Adrienne and Leah. So this is a report. I'll entertain a motion.
I move to, what would it be?
Accept the report.
Accept the report.
Can I get a second? And a second from Commissioner Ryan. Outstanding. Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Yeah, one moment. I lost my, where I am. Here I am. Okay. Well, I just want to say thank you, Commissioner Rubio, for bringing this to our attention. And thank you, Adrienne and Leah, for your commitment to protecting our urban forests and tree canopy. You bring years of experience to this work, and we value your interest in applying this knowledge to the commission. Our city will be better served because of your volunteer service. Thank you. I vote aye.
Max.
I want to thank Adrienne and Leah for stepping up and helping serve our city. I vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to also thank Adrienne and Leah. They will both be fantastic additions to the Urban Forestry Commission. I'm happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. These are great appointments. Happy to support them. I vote aye. The report's accepted. The appointments are approved. Item 241, please.
Appoint Jenny Lee and reappoint Courtney Helstein, Burke Nelson, and Sabra Purifoy to the Open and Accountable Elections Commission for a term to expire April 30, 2025.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. The Open and Accountable Elections Commission advises on the implementation of the Open and Accountable Elections Program. And we have four of the nine commissioners' first terms that are expiring. The director has recommended the reappointment of three commissioners and appointing one new commissioner to four-year terms to expire in April 2025. The three commissioners for reappointment are Courtney Helstein, Burke Nelson, and Sabra Purifoy. Ms. Helstein, Ms. Purifoy, and Mr. Nelson helped guide the Open and Accountable Elections Program through a successful implementation in its first election cycle. The recommendation for the new appointee is Jenny Lee. Jenny is the deputy director at the Coalition of Communities of Color. She is an experienced leader in racial and economic justice advocacy and in all of her career roles at the Coalition of Communities of Color, APANO, and the Oregon Housing Alliance. She originally is from Washington County, and Jenny now lives in Southeast Portland. She holds a JD from Harvard Law School and a BA from the University of Oregon. Jenny's a thoughtful and experienced community and policy leader that will bring an important perspective to the commission, and we are so lucky to have her involved in OAE Commission. Susan Motet, Director of Open and Accountable Elections, is here to answer any questions. Are there any questions for Susan? All right, back to you, Mayor.
All right, once again, fantastic appointments. Please call the roll, or this is a report. I'll accept a motion to accept the report.
I move that we accept the report.
Commissioner Mapps moves. Can I get a second?
Second.
Commissioner Rubio seconds. Please call the roll.
Brian.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Thank you, Suzanne, for your leadership. The Open and Accountable Elections Program has been definitely one of the greatest successes of public finance reform, probably nationally. And here in our city, the program has empowered a diverse candidates to run for office, leading to the most diverse city council ever, with representation also from across the city. The work of the Bureau leadership and the commission is integral to this success. Welcome aboard, Jenny. You're everywhere, and your volunteerism throughout our city is so noted, and we're fortunate to have you. And thanks for signing up for more service, Courtney, Burke, and Sabra, your time and energy commitment to the Open and Accountable Elections Commission, for those being reappointed, and for your continued investment in this process. I vote aye. Thank you.
Maps.
I'd like to thank Ginny, Courtney, Burke, and Sabra for stepping up for this very important work. I think this is one of the most transformational programs Portland has adopted in recent years. And that's one of the reasons why I am so glad to vote aye. Aye.
Rubio.
Again, just want to congratulate Courtney, Burke, and Sabra, and of course our newest member, Jenny. So many of us up here have you to thank for all your great work in setting up the OAE. And also thank you to Susan and her team as well. So I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I really appreciate these good folks stepping up and being willing to serve. I know most of these appointees personally, and I know them to be very hardworking and thoughtful people. So I think once again, Commissioner Rubio, these are terrific appointments. I also have a prediction to make that underscores the importance of having good people on this commission. I believe that the open and accountable election process will be the only process going forward. And therefore, this will be how we select our elected representatives going forward. That is my prediction. And therefore, it's really important that we have an oversight board that's well-grounded in the fundamentals, understands the importance of the work they're doing, and has a demonstrated capacity to lead. And all four of these individuals have that in spades. So thank you for bringing us a good commission. I vote aye. The report is accepted. The appointments are approved. Next item is 242.
Appoint Dina DiNucci to the Home Forward Board of Commissioners for a term to expire April 13, 2025.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, as Council Liaison to Home Forward, I have the honor and responsibility of introducing Home Forward board appointments for the Council's consideration. Four commissioners represent the City of Portland, two represent the City of Gresham, and two represent Multnomah County. A ninth member, a participant of Home Forward's programming, represents our residents and program participants. Commissioners are recommended from the area they serve, appointed by the mayor, commissioner in charge, and approved by the Portland City Council. Board members serve four-year renewable terms. In this case, we are affirming Gresham City Council's recommendation to appoint Dina DiNucci as one of Gresham representatives to the board. Dina is currently a Gresham City Councilor, a healthcare investigator from Multnomah County. She is a former small business owner and a community activist. Dina brings an intersectional approach rooted in her experience working at the intersections of equity, community health, and homeless services. She's eager to help with the discussion and decision-making and finding solutions and opportunities culminating in securely housing those within our region. With that, we have Home Forward Chief Administrative Officer Kitty Miller, Board Chair Damian Hall, and Board Appointee Dina DiNucci, who would like to offer some remarks. I turn it over to all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. And just to let the group know, Chair Hall was unable to be with us today. But speaking on behalf of Home Forward, we are both honored and excited about Ms. DiNucci's appointment to our board. With over 20 years of engagement with the Rockwood community through community outreach efforts, she's a fierce advocate for the community, spearheading new initiatives and community events by cultivating relationships and working in partnership with residents. As a businesswoman, mentor, founder, poverty coach, or policy advocate, she holds a belief in empowerment of others. We're sure her insights will enrich our agency, and we truly welcome Ms. DiNucci to Home Forward.
Thank you. Am I my turn to speak, I assume?
Yes,
go ahead. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for this honor to be appointed to the Home Forward Board. I would like to start quickly by thanking Commissioner Mapps very specifically for recognizing Frank Ray, who was part of our City of Gresham team for 20 years, and really appreciate the acknowledgement there. But then going forward, just to say, over my many years, I've had opportunities to work with Home Forward with Wallace Medical Concern, as I was doing healthcare and public housing outreach heavily within the communities, and also working directly in homeless services and many other ways that I have been concerned, but also ready to advocate for people having a harder time with housing. As things have moved east a little bit more, and certainly with the COVID pandemic, we see an urgency like never before, and it is such an important role that I hope to bring insight and strong advocacy to make sure that we can meet the needs of our marginalized populations. So I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so is it open now to accept the report, make a motion, or do we have testimony?
No, this would be the time to make a motion.
Okay, great. So I move to accept the report.
Second.
Or to accept the nomination, yeah.
Yep, we have a motion from Commissioner Ryan. We have a second from Commissioner Mapps to accept the report. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
I'm sorry, Mayor. I believe this is a resolution.
Oh, you're right. I stand corrected. I totally screwed you guys up, but it was good practice and it was fun. Is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
Very good. Call the roll on the resolution.
Thank you. Ryan.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you, Kitty and Dina, for being here this morning. It always adds so much to our meetings when we have people show from the community and speak from their heart. And you're so aligned with your passion, Dina. So just really grateful that you're stepping up into additional service. Your commitment to Home Forward's work and to the commission. I look forward to getting to know you and working with you. I vote aye.
Mapps.
I'd just like to thank Dina for stepping up to this important role. I look forward to the work that you're going to do for the city, and and our surrounding communities, and I'm delighted to vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to thank Councillor DiNucci for stepping up into this role. Gresham is a really critical partner to the city of Portland and to the region, and you come from a very strong, convicted council to make their community better. And I'm excited for you to join this important table because you have such an important voice and experience to bring forward to that table. The board's guidance and leadership will be a major factor in the success of meeting the region's housing goals. So I'm very happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. Great appointments. The resolution is approved. The appointments are approved. Thank you very much, Commissioner Ryan. And thanks to Dina, as well as the entire Board of Commissioners for their hard work. We appreciate it. Next item, 243.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Sunnyside South, LADS South Reconstruction and Green Streets project number E10368 for an estimated cost of $10,330,000.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, this project comes from Environmental Services, which of course provides sewer and stormwater collection services to meet the city's current and future needs and to protect public health, water quality, and the environment. This project will replace or repair almost 2 miles of deteriorating public sewer pipes that are both an average of over 100 years old and too small to serve the area. This project will also connect non-conforming sewers for 55 properties, build 58 Green Street planters to manage stormwater naturally, and install 75 ADA curb ramps. I'm here to tell us more about this important project is Carrie Rubin, Interim Chief Engineer, and Rhonda Fass, Capital Project Manager for Environmental Services.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Carrie Rubin with the Bureau of Environmental Services. We have a brief presentation prepared and will be available for questions at the end. Keelan, can you bring up the presentation for us? Thank you. I will now turn it over to the project manager, Rhonda Fast.
All right, good morning. Thank you, Carrie, and good morning, Mayor and Council members. My name is Rhonda Fast. I am the project manager for the Sunnyside LADS South Reconstruction and Green Streets project. We have, as Commissioner Mapps mentioned, an ordinance today to enter into a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest possible bidder to deliver the work here that I'll describe in this short presentation. Next slide, please, Keelan. First, a little background. Generally, our project is aimed at addressing risks associated with undersized and old pipes. And by old, I mean some of them in this project area, our project area, are over 100 years old. Our goal is to reduce the risk of basement sewer backups and structural failures, as well as protecting our investments in the combined system overall and prevent combined system overflows or CSOs to the Willamette River. Our project is part of the Neighborhood to the River program area, where we integrate traditional pipe solutions such as rehab and repair work with more natural solutions such as green streets. We also work proactively with the community to do vegetation and tree planting projects and private property retrofits so that less stormwater overall flows into our system. And I should note that this is one of a series of very similar projects in Southeast Portland, inner Southeast Portland, and one of which you saw a couple of months ago, the Buckman Stark project. Next slide, please. Our project area is a primarily residential area in inner Southeast, generally bounded by Division at the south, Belmont to the north, and then Southeast 12th to the west, and extending out to Southeast 41st to the east. And next slide. For the work in LADS edition, the work includes pipe work in the street, and the orange indicates where we're proposing open trench. work. And then we're also doing a rehab lining, which is indicated in blue. And then green streets are indicated in green there, and new ADA ramps in yellow. So you can see the scope of the work there. And then next slide, please. In Sunnyside, largely the same kind of work. Originally, actually, the work on for Hawthorne Boulevard proper was included in our project as part of our project scope. But next slide. Last summer, council approved an emergency ordinance to expedite that work while businesses were largely closed during the early part of the COVID-19 emergency and ahead of a PBOT planned, a planned PBOT pave and paint project. That work is now complete, and we got really positive feedback from the community about our decision to expedite that work. Next slide. So the remaining scope for our project includes over 2 miles of pipe replacement or rehab. We're addressing 55 non-conforming routes of service in the project area, installing 58 Green Street facilities. And also when we tear up the road, we upgrade ADA ramps to improve pedestrian safety and meet larger city goals. And for this project, we'll upgrade 75 ramps. Next slide. And BES has a robust public involvement program for our projects. And Debbie Castleton, who's here if y'all have questions, has been providing outreach for this project since 2017, boosted by additional resources as part of the Neighborhood to the River program that I mentioned earlier. And outreach activities for this project started early in the design process through mailers, social media posts, open houses, and presentations to stakeholders. And then other projects nearby also facilitated the dissemination of information. And Debbie was a big part of those projects as well. And then feedback from the community was incorporated into the final design. Next slide. And then we're expanding our notion of project outreach to also include the contracting community. This list, the bulleted list here on this slide, shows the types of work that are a part of our project that have the potential to be completed by COBID certified contractors, at least based on recent experiences such as on Hawthorne. So prior to bidding, we will reach out to contractor associations and primes and share information like this list so they can start establishing connections and partnerships ahead of bidding. And in fact, this Friday, we have an information session scheduled with procurement. Next slide. So we estimate the construction to be upwards of $10.3 million for this project. The funds for this project are available in our capital improvement program 5-year budget. We're anticipating that construction will begin in the early part of 2022 and commence in early summer of 2023. Next slide. And that concludes our presentation. And Carrie and I are available for questions if you have any.
Not seeing any questions at this point. That completes your presentation.
Very good.
All right, then, Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up for this item.
All right, very good.
I just have a quick question. Yeah, why we have Carrie here and Commissioner Mapps as well. When I see projects like this and I notice that you do a lot of the ramps, is that, I always thought that was connect, that's PBOT, but could you explain when the Bureau of Environmental Services takes that charge as opposed to PBOT? You're educating me and hopefully all the people that are tuned in this morning.
Right. Carrie, go ahead.
I can just kind of talk about it briefly in that whenever we come in and do a capital project where we are removing or disturbing a certain percentage of the roadway, and there are standards set around that, we then, as BES, install an ADA ramp as part of our project. And that helps the city meet our overall goal which PBOD is very focused on meeting around ADA ramps around the city. So, you know, that is a citywide goal, BES, you know, whenever we do a project, we build ramps. I think we build nearly as many as PBOT does as part of our infrastructure work, which is great that we can support achieving that overall goal.
No, I love hearing, thank you, Carrie. I love hearing this. I think we too often notice where we're siloed, and it's great to notice how we just naturally partner with one another to reach the bigger picture goal, which is what all residents want. So anyway, thank you. I was educated by your presentation with that note in particular. Thanks.
Very good. Any further discussion before I move this along? This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you, everyone. Next item, 244.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and price agreements for the urgent repair of sewer and stormwater systems for an estimated annual amount of $2,200,000.
Commissioner Mapps.
Mr. Mayor, colleagues, this proposal also comes out of Environmental Services. As we just learned in the previous presentation, Environmental Services provides sewage and stormwater collection services. And that's because part of our mission is to protect public health, water quality, and the environment. When a sewer or stormwater system fails, Environmental Services needs to respond immediately because a rapid response to things like a sewer pipe break is the key to protecting public health, the environment, and the city's infrastructure. The ordinance before us today is one of the ways Environmental Services responds to failures in our sewer and stormwater systems. This ordinance authorizes Environmental Services to maintain a set of on-call urgent contractors to assist Environmental Services when they need to call in help, specialized help for urgent repairs to our sewer and stormwater systems. The price agreements would be authorized at $2.2 million annually for 5 years for a total of $11 million. Here today with a brief presentation is Jeremiah Hess, Engineering Supervisor with Environmental Services. Jeremiah, welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for having me. Jeremiah Hess, Environmental Services. I will share my screen. Okay, is that okay for everyone? Everyone can see my screen? Yeah, okay, thanks, Commissioner Ryan. I didn't see any response there. Thanks, Mr. Mapps. okay, so as Commissioner Mapps mentioned, this is a price agreement for repair of urgent sewer and stormwater systems. For a bit of background, in case folks are unfamiliar with the sanitary and stormwater collection systems, the Bureau of Environmental Services owns and operates all of the public sanitary and stormwater collection, conveyance, and treatment systems within the city limits. In addition, the city owns and operates the Tryon Creek wastewater treatment plant in Lake Oswego. Since the mid-1980s, BES has partnered with the Bureau of Transportation's Maintenance and Operations Environmental Systems Division to manage the operations and maintenance of the sanitary and stormwater collection systems. To complement the services that we call PBOTMO provides, BES has managed an on-call program since 2015 to provide services beyond the capability and capacity of PBOTMO. So while PBOT does the routine day-to-day operation and maintenance of the sewer systems, they're primarily focused on inspection, cleaning, and repair work. And they also do rehabilitation and replacement of sewer and stormwater assets, as I've described in these bullets here. Now, the on-call contractors provide special equipment and distinct services that city crews can't perform, such as deep excavations, complex pipe installations, or rehabilitation technologies, such as drilling, boring, large diameter pipe repair, cured in place pipe lining, et cetera. I mentioned capacity. So oftentimes the durations of some of these events would take significantly longer than what PBOT can or should manage. For example, if a project would take longer than 2 or 3 days, it would take city crews off of routine maintenance work or other planned work, which is well-defined in our annual operating plans. For example, in the picture here, we have our on-call contractors working in a backyard. We have, as Rhonda and Carrie described previously, we have an aging system with an average age of 80 years. And since the city's developed over those last 80 years, we have sewers in places that are really challenging to access, such as backyards or easements or ravines in Southwest Portland. So when we have a situation like this that could take potentially a few days, we like to utilize the on-call contractors because, for example, here they had to go into somebody's backyard to access the sewer that had collapsed. And so they had to dig by hand, and they used this conveyor belt to transfer the spoils out of the backyard and into to get them out of there. So that's just one example of something that they do, as far as that would tie up city crews. So we would like the on-call to do that instead. The key function this program provides, in addition to those distinct services, is around urgency. So projects typically require timely mobilization and response and can't wait for a CIP project. So this comes out of our operations budgets, not CIP work. The goal is minimizing the impact to customers and adjacent infrastructure and getting customers back in service as soon as possible. These situations often require problem solving and finding solutions on the fly. For example, we had a sinkhole on downtown on Southwest Salmon. So it's shown in the picture here a few years ago. It happened at midnight. There were, as you can see from some of the markings on the ground, a lot of adjacent infrastructure. A deep, large hole developed, which closed down the majority of a street downtown for a couple of days. So we called the on-call contractor around midnight. They met one of our staff, our project managers out there. They figured out the scope, and the contractor worked with our engineer to submit a proposal. They quickly got it the sewer fixed and back in service. And by Monday morning, the street the pipe had been fixed and the hole had been refilled and people were back in service, and that minimized the impact to the downtown core there. So that's just one example. Many common things that happens are sewer releases, landslides, and flooding events. And we do use this program. We use on average over the last 5 or 6 years, we have 6 to 10 or so of these events per year of varying magnitude. So as Mr. Mapps mentioned, we're looking at entering into a price agreement for 5 fiscal years. The budget over those 5 years is $11 million or $2.2 million per year. We tend to award up to 4 contractors. So each of those has an annual limit of $5.5 million per year. The annual maximum, the maximum on a task order is $250,000. Anything beyond that, we would probably go to an emergency ordinance. This program is really intended to avoid those emergency situations, although we do respond to emergencies as well. So hence the urgent, that's the little difference there between urgent and emergency work. We want to avoid those emergencies so when the big stuff happens. Since we are bidding in the prime contractor development program, all of the firms in that program are certified DMWESB contractors. So that's how we're encouraging participation from certified firms. Just by bidding in the PCDP, we'll be awarding certified firms prime contracts. And the certified prime contractors will be expected to subcontract 20% to other certified firms. And that is all I have. I'll take questions if anyone has any.
Questions? Doesn't look like at this particular moment. That was a very thorough presentation. Is there any public testimony on 244, Keelan?
No one signed up.
Very good. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you for the presentation. Next up is 245 also. This is from the Water Bureau.
Amend contract with Origo Software Technologies, Inc. for an additional 5 years for the continued use of the capital project management software system in the amount of $784,000.
Colleagues, this is a second reading. We've heard a presentation and had opportunity for public testimony. Is there any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ryan.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 246, also a second reading.
Authorize bid solicitation and contracting with the lowest responsive and responsible bidder for construction of the Washington Park Hypochlorite Facility Improvements Project at an estimated cost of $1,300,000.
Any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next items, if you could read them together, please, items 247 and 248.
Item 247, amend management agreement with Kemper Sports Management, Inc. for Colwood Golf Course for an additional 17 months in the amount of $2,500,000 for a total contract amount not to exceed $6,179,013. And item 248, amend management agreement with Kemper Sports Management, Inc. for Heron Lakes Golf Course for an additional 12 months in the amount of $2,500,000 for a total contract amount not to exceed $9,807,912.
Thank you. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. I've had the opportunity to meet with Parks Golf Manager Vincent Johnson on multiple occasions, and his commitment to making the sport of golf and our city golf courses more accessible, especially for women, youth, BIPOC communities, is clear. Talking to Vincent has also helped me learn more about the environmental benefits of the courses, such as improving water quality, providing wildlife habitat, and managing stormwater. Today, we are bringing two ordinances seeking council approval to extend management agreements for the Colwood Golf Course, Golf Center, and Heron Lakes Golf Course. I will turn it over to Vincent to provide an overview of these ordinances.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio, and good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Vincent Johnson, and I'm the Director of Golf for Portland Parks and Recreation. As you know, the golf program consists of five golf facilities and is an enterprise fund operating solely on the revenues generated at the facilities. In the first 12 months of the COVID-19 pandemic, the golf program recorded almost 460,000 rounds. That is a 32% increase over the prior 12 months and the highest activity in the past 18 years. Although the golf program suspended banquet events and customer access to the clubhouses is greatly limited, golfing remained open due to its ability for the public to socially distance while playing the course. Safety was the first priority, but it's important to also note how impactful access to golf has been for many members of the public. Our public courses have helped contribute to Portlanders' physical and mental wellness during unprecedented times. This past year is a strong affirmation of why golf is a public recreation. As I turn my attention to the item I'm presenting today, I want to express that Park strives to build upon the impact we've had on Portlanders during COVID, making golf spaces more inclusive and accessible and our golf program more equitable. Parks has agreements with clubhouse operators for each of our 5 golf facilities. Each of our 5 agreements are unique, but in general, the golf course operators perform all clubhouse and customer service operations, including golf round reservations, retail operations, and all food and beverage services at their courses, while Parks maintains the clubhouses and the golf courses. In May 2019, city auditors released an audit of the golf program where they recommended golf seek more favorable contracts to help us achieve our strategic plan initiatives, including environmental stewardship, access to the game, and financial sustainability. This recommendation also has the support of the Golf Advisory Committee. The 2 actions we have before you today are at Colwood Golf Center, located in Coley Neighborhood, and Heron Lakes Golf Course, located in North Portland. Both are managed by Kemper Sports, and our contracts with Kemper at those 2 courses expire in 2021. Parks intends to do a comprehensive request for proposal for the 4 Eastside Golf Course contracts in 2022. As a result, we request to extend these 2 contracts until October 2022 to align the expiration of the 4 Eastside Golf Course contracts. The additional 12 months provided by these extensions will allow the golf program more time to assess the post-COVID environment and its possible impacts to the golf program. The funds for these proposed contract extensions are accounted for in the golf operating budget and the 5-year forecast for the golf fund. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, colleagues. Any question? Commissioner Mapps.
Hi, Vincent. Do you know when, first, thank you for the presentation. It's always fun to learn about the golf courses, and I'm delighted to hear about the increased traffic during COVID. That's great. I'm glad Portlanders found you. Do you know when these contracts were originally signed?
Yeah, they were signed. Well, there's different contracts. These 2 were 2016 for Colwood. Uh-huh. And 2018 for Heron Lakes.
Thank you. And I'm also glad to hear that we're going to send this out for kind of a comprehensive rebid in the next year or so. Do you have a sense of some of the things that you're looking for in the next generation of golf course management?
The big word for me is sustainability. So, you know, you have environmental, operational, growing demand, and financial. So just going, you know, we have a 100-year program. It's a program that I was a part of growing up. And how do we see that, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, it's still thriving and folks have greater access than ever to the game. So the sustainability would be the biggest way is how do we make the game as accessible as possible? So that's a big, big priority.
Great. I'm delighted to hear that. And of course, one of this council's other concerns is to create opportunities for minority contractors. Do we know if there are minority contractors in the space of golf course management? Do we know or?
I would say, you know, obviously the golf, it's a global game. Okay. You know, there's the operations, municipal golf programs all over the country. So I can't speak to knowing exactly. In Oregon, I'd say there's not as many, but I think that there's still opportunity, and that is something that definitely is appealing. Is the thought of, you know, finding more diverse operators to help us achieve our goals.
All right, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the answers to those questions,
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioner Rubio, for bringing this forward. Vincent Johnson, that was a great report. I don't golf. I have nothing against it. I just don't golf. But a lot of people I know do, and they told me how much it saved them during the past year. And I was also taken with you mentioning that you were part of a program that exposed you to golf. And I don't know if I missed it, but I just want to hear, I can tell you love your job, which is a positive thing to say. I'd love to hear more about your vision and the support that we can also give you to really allow our golf courses to continue to include more and more of our youth. So anything you'd like to enlighten us with.
Yeah, absolutely. Youth golf is something I'm very passionate about. And we do a lot already, but definitely more is warranted, and ultimately to lower the barrier. So one way that I see this is, you know, for instance, my father, I had access to the golf because my father worked at a golf course. And a question I always ask myself when I'm coming to work is, if I were just put into the municipal system without that, would I be sitting here before you today? And that's the question, is ultimately how far can folks, can youth really get into the game? Because it offers so many things. It's a lifetime game. It can connect you with folks of all ages. And so the fact that this can give to you in so many ways, we want to find ways to make golf more accessible, meaning free, no cost opportunities to really enhance those, to allow them to, you know, learn great life values and just learn how to, you know, experience open spaces in a game that can definitely teach character. You know, it has its up and downs too. So that's another priority when it comes to our forward vision.
Thank you so much, Vincent.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thanks. I just wanted to jump back in, inspired by some of the questions that Commissioner Ryan asked. Like a lot of parents, I'm starting to think about recreational activities and summer camps for my kids. I'm just wondering if Portland's golf courses offer summer camps for kids that are affordable. And if so, how can we learn more?
Yeah, well, so our courses do have their own websites. One big important partner that we have is the First Tee of Greater Portland, and they have a presence at Heron Lakes and then a larger one at Colwood. And so they do a lot of great programming, introductory programming. Each golf course do have junior camps throughout the summer. So those are very popular. A couple other things I wanted to mention, at Eastmoreland, any junior 17 and below can get, this is prior to COVID. There's no cereal, but you can get a free bucket of balls and a box of cereal 7 days a week before 9 o'clock. So that's a great way to have it. It's pretty remarkable to see all the young kids and their parents showing up there. And so there are some great low barrier entries. And then there's obviously your golf camps that are getting you a little farther down the road.
Great, thank you very much.
Commissioner Rubio.
Vincent. We had talked in the past about ways that you have plans to bring in more folks into the courses that don't necessarily play golf so that they can take advantage of the environment. Can you talk a little bit about what those plans are?
Yeah, I think generally, and this is something that is also getting looked at other municipalities, how do you bring in a wider public for two reasons? One is, there are opportunities to leverage the space that we have around the clubhouse area. But then two is, you know, golf historically has been exclusive, and to have wider uses that are more widely known, just to create the expectation that people of color, underrepresented folks at golf courses, women, youth, you know, expect to and have a reason to use the space. It's also going to help change culture at golf courses, which is another really big component to really making the game what it ought to be in a municipal setting.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for the presentations. Let's see. Is there public testimony, Keelan, on either 247 or 248?
Yes, we have one person who signed up for both items.
Great.
Edith Gillis.
All right, Edith, 3 minutes.
Nope, 6 minutes. I'm Edith Gillis, and I'm calling about the Colwood Golf Course. I care about each of you individually and collectively, and what you decide and do matters. I'm wondering if you feel frustrated or bored in assembly line of bureaucratic routines and rituals and votes that are mind-numbing, soul-sickening, and spirit-deadening, disconnected from truly helping people who need it most. Another vote on the conveyor belt, pick it up, rubber stamp it, pick it up, rubber stamp it, pick it up, rubber stamp it. Do you feel uneasy that these items rushed past you are going to build a monster machine impoverishing the city so it can't make the heroic changes needed? And then you see this crazy woman coming to you for about 4 decades, calling you to conscience, caring, courage, community, seeing the interconnectivity, saying each vote and post state how it fits into a matrix of public safety, housing, climate resilience, food security, local solar energy and economic self-sufficiency, public bank, racial and other social justice, democracy and peace. Do not give another $2.5 million to over $6 million for 17 months to 20 white men and 3 white women with no experience being homeless, no experience restoring ecosystems, no experience reversing racism and classism, and no commitment to worker rights. Gulf is going to be dying out because those who are having the bigger gap of the haves and the have-nots are not going to be around the scum. And we're not going to be able to get anywhere. Don't talk about the character that Trump got from playing golf. We need to use that space that Kemper Sports Management is totally unprepared and inadequate for using the clubhouses to build more bathrooms, showers, laundry, and kitchen facilities for our houseless to have nearby dorm facilities and tiny house eco-villages. We need to stop using and wasting polluting our water with all these chemicals that are harmful for the wildlife, for the land, for the soil, and for the people who live nearby who are being impoverished and sickened by this. Instead, use permaculture, food forests, have different kinds of parkour, exercise outdoors, use community gardens, restore our environment, have it more safe, and have it prepared for needing the millions of people who are going to be having to be housed when there's the earthquakes. Use this land better, use this money better, do what you say is an emergency and a priority, and don't have it with people who have no experience countering racism and classism, who are not making it accessible to people. And don't think that the wealthy are going to hang around riffraff if we start coming in. And don't think that having a few little classes in golf is going to help us have equal justice. It's not going to give us housing. It's not going to give us solar roof panels. This is the wrong company. It's the wrong activity. We have a better use for the land, the resources, and money. Be fair, be kind, and don't earn the distrust and the anger of the community seeing how you are going against all of our votes, all of our testimony, and all of our shouts on the streets. Don't make it worse.
Does that complete public testimony?
Yes.
All righty. Let's see. 247 is the non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. 248 is also a non-emergency ordinance. It too moves to second reading. Thank you for the presentation. Item 249.
Approve findings to authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding requirements and authorize the use of the alternative contracting method of construction manager, general contractor for the Mill Park construction project for an estimated amount of $7,500,000.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. This park development has been anticipated by the community since the completion of the master plan in 2017. And in fact, the park has been underdeveloped for the past 35 years since the city acquired the property from Multnomah County in 1986. When fully developed, Mill Park will serve 1,440 households. Of those households, Mill Park's households, there are 881 unique households not currently served by other Portland Park's half-mile service areas. This ordinance will allow Portland Parks and Recreation to manage the construction of this great new park in a collaborative and value-conscious way. The process offers another great opportunity for Portland Parks and Recreation to partner with diverse communities in East Portland to create a much-needed signature park for the Mill Park neighborhood and for East Portland. So now I will turn it over to staff for their presentation.
Good morning. My name is Robert Johnson Craig, Mayor Wheeler, and members of council. I am a capital project manager within Assets and Development Division of Portland Parks and Recreation. And with me here today is Kathleen Brennis Moria, the interim chief procurement officer. I'm very excited to be here today to request council authorization for an exemption for competitive bidding requirements and authorization for the use of alternative contracting method of the construction manager, general contractor in connection with the Mill Park construction project. We have a presentation and I'd like to present it to allow myself to introduce the project and introduce the ordinance to you. I think Kathleen is here, so I see she's on the screen, so we'll both be here to answer questions.
Next slide, please. Mill Park development site is located in the Mill Park neighborhood. It's just east of I-205. It's located between Southeast Stark and Southeast Division and closely adjacent to the Southeast 122nd Avenue. The site is a 5.66-acre undeveloped neighborhood park in a very park-deficient area of East Portland. The parkland was transferred to the City of Portland ownership in a transfer agreement from Multnomah County in 1986. Next slide, please. Mill Park is located within a few blocks. It's somewhat hidden in the block system. It's located just east of Southeast 117th. It's bound by Southeast Mill Street to the north and Southeast Lincoln to the south. And just on its eastern border is Southeast 122nd. Located directly adjacent to Mill Park Elementary School and the David Douglas is the Mill Park Elementary School and the David Douglas School District. The existing park contains an informal walking path and several mature trees, but is otherwise it's undeveloped. It's been undeveloped for the past 35 years. The council adopted Mill and Midland Combined Master Plan in 2017, included a significant public involvement process and park improvements to support livability in East Portland. Next slide, please. A little bit about Mill Park Elementary, which shares its western border. Mill Park Elementary School has the most diverse student population of all David Douglas School District schools, with 77.1% diversity in enrollment, the highest of all the 16 schools in the district. 359 of 483 students, or 74.3% of Mill Park students, qualify for the free and reduced lunch, and 239 of the 483 students, or 49%, are enrolled in English as a second language. Next slide, please. The key features of the future developed park include a central lawn with space for sports and leisure activities, a community garden, a playground, and a splash pad, a circular pathway with a soft surface trail, picnic shelter and tables, landscaping with trees and native plants, and a small parking area. Next slide, please. Development costs for the project are estimated at $12 million. A City of Portland procurement process is currently underway for the professional and design services team to lead the design and construction process based on the 2017 master plan. Notice to proceed for the design team is anticipated this spring. Construction of the project will require specialized skills and experience in construction methodology, problem solving, sequencing, scheduling, and cost estimating to successfully complete the work in a timely manner. Overall O&M is estimated at $473,000 once the park is developed and constructed in spring, early summer 2024. Next slide, please. What is the CMGC method? The CMGC method augments the traditional scope of work of the general contractor with that of a construction manager under a single contract with the owner. At an early point in the design phase, the city, using a competitive selection process, selects a contractor to provide construction management and general contracting services. By joining the project team during the design, the CMGC can collaborate with the architect engineer on the development of the design and preparation of the design documents, material pricing, sequencing, materials, and methods. The CMGC contracting method can benefit a construction project in a variety of ways. The competitive process of selecting a CMGC firm typically involves the consideration of more information than simply price. The city and parks will craft their own equity-based selection criteria tailored to the city's aspirational goals and specific and unique requirements of the project. This allows the city to make a more informed selection to better benefit the project and support overall city goals. One significant benefit of the CMGC method comes from the close interaction of the project team members. Early involvement in the CMGC firm helps build positive relationships between the team members and results in a collaborative team approach for the project. This is especially helpful for mentoring co-bid firms in new construction methods, construction management, and project delivery. Next slide, please. Parks has had success using the CMGC method as a meaningful and engaging approach to reach the DMW ESB contracting community. Parks is committed to improving outcomes. I can speak from my own personal experience as the PPNR project manager for the Pioneer Courthouse Square renovation. In the Pioneer Courthouse Square project, Howard S. Wright partnered with Faison Construction as a teaming partner, and the project provided 41% of the subcontractor program equity program participation. As the PPNR project manager for the Mill Park project, I would approach the construction contractor with partnership, with procurement, and a similar approach to directly engage in regular meetings to promote DMWSB participation in the contracting plan. Next slide, please. Procurement services and PPNR recommend using the alternative contracting method of construction manager general contractor for the project, which will allow PPNR to select a contractor with experience and qualifications necessary to coordinate and develop a roughly 6-acre park with demonstrated expertise participating in a collaborative CMGC design process. It allows the contractor to provide input during the design process, including the construction packaging and sequencing to ensure equity and service delivery, and to avoid high future maintenance costs, minimize impacts on the neighborhood, and provide input into the development and construction of a park, which reflects community pride and is safe, clean, accessible for our ages, cultures, and abilities. It also provides continuous value engineering to ensure cost containment and best value accrued to community. It also provides opportunities for service-disabled veteran business enterprises, disadvantaged minority women, and emerging small business, minority-owned businesses in the contracting community. Based on the factual findings for proposed exemption from competitive bidding, the exemption of the project from the competitive bidding requirements of ORS 279C is unlikely to encourage favoritism or diminish competition for public contracts because the contract will be awarded using a competitive solicitation process. It is likely to result in a substantial, it could result in cost savings to the city because the CMGC contractor will be integrated into the design team during the entire process. Next slide. We request council approval of this ordinance, which will allow PPNR and procurement services to pursue the construction manager general contractor alternative contracting method. Next slide. Questions?
Very good, colleagues, any questions? Thank you for the presentation. Is there any public testimony on this ordinance?
No one signed up, Mayor.
Very good. Commissioner Ryan has a question.
Yeah, Robin, thank you for that presentation. It was very helpful. I'm also really delighted that we're working with David Douglas School District and the Mill Park specifically. I was a principal for a day not too long ago at that school, and the resources are so necessary. And unlike PPS, they can't pass capital bond levies in the same way. And so it's really important for the city to lean in to the school districts east of PPS and help with that infrastructure. So I'm just delighted. I couldn't tell when I was listening, I probably just missed it. When's our estimated time where this will all come together when the project will be complete?
Well, crossing my fingers as a project manager, we're looking for a 2024 spring, or late spring, early summer 2024 for project construction to be completed.
Okay, and that's when it'll be in our maintenance budget in 23-24. Okay, that makes sense. All right.
Fiscal year 24-25.
24-25. All right. All right. It seems like a long ways off, but it really isn't. Anyway, thank you, and I wish you well, and my fingers are now crossed with yours. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. This is the first reading of the non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Robin, great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Elin, that completes our business for this morning.
Yes, it does.
All right, colleagues, thank you all. We are adjourned. We will see you at 2 p.m.
All right.